Representative.
I think we need a quorum even then.
What is the information hearing? We're going to call the House Veterans and Emergency, House Veterans and Emergency Management Committee together. It is, in fact, May 4th, Star Wars Day, I guess, 2017.
Evidently.
We're going to start off by moving things around a little bit because we don't quite have a quorum to be able to do the business part of the House. We're going to basically move the informational hearing up to the beginning, which normally is what we do, but we'd actually had it asked to move to the bottom. So today is going to be one of those days. Appreciate everybody being flexible. We've got a lot to get done. I want to make sure and we get the informational meeting going. Before we do that, however, we're going to take a moment and think about what we do on Thursdays, the why we're here part. Sometimes in this business, especially in this building, the noise gets the better of us, and we try to spend at least a few minutes once a week to focus. On Saturday, April 29th, 2017, United States Army First Lieutenant Weston Lee, 25 years old, died in Mosul, Iraq when an IED detonated during patrol. He was assigned the 2nd Brigade Combat Team, 82nd Airborne Division in Fort Bragg, North Carolina. He joined the Army in 2015. He was a platoon leader and died on his first deployment. He had been conducting security as part of advise and assist support to Iraq's Kurdish fighters known as the Peshmerga. Colonel Pat Work, commander of the 2nd Brigade Combat Team, said in a statement, First Lieutenant Wesley was an extraordinary young man and officer. He was exactly the type of leader that our paratroopers served. He will never be. We now turn our full attention to his family in their mourning. It is important to remember, since 2003, 4,159 U.S. troops have died in Iraq from both hostile fire and non-combat incidents. There are presently more than 5,000 U.S. troops in Iraq, with more on the way, in the fight against ISIS, which is more than at any time since the official United States withdrawal in 2011. First Lieutenant Lee's death marked the second death since October 2016 when a roadside bomb killed a Navy Chief Petty Officer on the outskirts of Mosul in an intensified effort to retake the city, which has a labyrinth of small streets, alleys, and rooftops, which aid ambushes and suicide bombings. The reason we try to keep an eye and remember ongoing activities overseas is because we're still at war. Since 2001, we've continued to be at war in places near and far, with special emphasis in the Middle East. And our job here in this building, whatever other issues take the news for the day, our job is to make sure that the folks that we send into harm's way are taken care of. So that's why we're here. Thank you for being here today, committee. I see that we now have a quorum, which is good. We're going to invite up Mr. Cameron Smith and Mitch Sparks to start off the invited testimony, and then we will have the special guests come and talk after that. Come forward, please. We're going to open that informational hearing.
Good afternoon, Chair Evans, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Cameron Smith, and we are also taking the liberty, with the blessing of the chair and committee, to invite up Commissioner Primovich from Yamhill, and I think we'll let him kick off with our partnership discussion on veteran services.
Thank you, Cameron. My name is Stan Primovich. I am County Commissioner, Yamhill County, and a proud veteran of the United States Navy. Spent part of 64, the better part of 65, and another large part of 66 in Vietnam, and very proud of that time spent. I do want to speak to the real need that we have, not only in Yamhill County, but throughout our state, to provide for veteran services, and especially to properly fund VSOs. If there's any place in the state where we will get a return on investment, it's by funding our VSOs and getting our veterans connected to the benefits that they've so justly earned. And so it's for that reason I'm here before this committee, asking you to do everything in your power to fund veterans to the greatest capacity possible. To that end, yesterday we wrapped up our budgets in Yamhill County, and I was able to wrangle an additional $10,000 for our VSO with no strings attached for him to use as is appropriate for him to continue to do the amazing job he does in connecting our veterans to their benefits. Every dollar that he connects them to comes back multiple fold into the county economy. So that is that's why I'm here. I will answer any questions anybody might have for me, but I just want you to know that you have an opportunity sitting in your positions to really drive this message through the House and make the state aware of just how important. And you talked about a gentleman gave his life just recently. Our veterans, the reason we're able to sit here and have this discussion today is because of veterans. So I just really want to challenge you and ask you to support at every level funding. Thank you.
Commissioner, thank you very much for your service. Before we move to the rest of the panel, any questions? Yes, sir, go ahead.
Thank you, Commissioner, for being here. So your VSO officer is a full-time position in the county?
It is, yes. And we have one administrative assistant, and he does an amazing job. He's probably one of the best in the state. I know he's the best dressed in the state, but Jerry does an amazing job, and every veteran that he brings to the table gets them connected with their benefits the county in a multiple number of ways. So
thank you. And so do we have some idea, and maybe Cameron, that some idea how many veterans there are in your county?
10,000.
10,000.
Yeah, we have 102, almost 103,000 citizens in Yamhill County, and we have 10,000 veterans.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Escobar, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. I just wanted to welcome you home, first of all, because you're a veteran. Yeah. Where in country were you?
Well, let me see. The first place we landed was Chulai. First time anybody had been in that harbor since 1779, when our ship, on our way in, got hung up on a sandbar, and we sat out there watching the firefight over the top of us for about 7 hours as we shifted things. So that was our initiation. Spent a lot of time in Da Nang, a lot of time in Saigon, a lot of time up a variety of rivers in the Mekong Delta, Cameron Bay. So saw a little bit of a lot of the country.
Yeah.
I was on LST, that's why.
Wasn't that fun?
Yeah, the LSTs were an exciting place to be.
In Kanto-Bentui area?
I'm sorry?
You in the Kanto-Bentui area?
It's not familiar to
that's
me.
That's down in the Delta.
Yeah. Believe me, some of the places we were, I probably can't remember. I did go back in 2007, though, and do a little bit of touring and went every place, took my daughter every place I was
Thanks
during the war.
Thanks for what you do for veterans. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mitch, Director, which
Good
wants
afternoon.
To go first?
Again, Cameron Smith, the Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and I apologize. As a Marine, I should have separated these two shipmates. These
right. I think it's perfect.
Yeah. We know you don't know any better. It's okay.
We got him there. That's
and what Commissioner Primozich did not mention was that he has been co-chair of AOC's Veterans Committee and has been a really renewed engagement out of the cross-section of urban and rural counties, being a huge advocacy for their veterans, but also for their veteran service officers that are serving them. And that surge of resources that you've heard the commissioner mention, surging both discretionary dollars for that VSO to best place, whether on outreach or marketing or travel or further partnerships, but also some dollars to plus up that admin assistance, essentially almost a paralegal model that continues to free up capacity for the veteran service officer to continue to do claims and outreach. Counties have been stepping up ever since 1945 and then augmented with those state expansion and enhancement dollars on pastor and county VSOs and national service orgs. So this will be a little bit repetitive for Representative Meek, but was a portion of our second phase budget hearing to the subcommittee that we report through on ways and means, transportation, and economic development. And we always start out, whether we're talking about our policies, our programs, or our budget, it is about the veterans that we serve for our starting point, and that we are Oregon veterans, both as an agency, across this committee, and across the state, 326,000. So back to the governor's budget, originally submitted back in December 1. We remember for the 17-19 biennium, that initial $2 million general fund and the estimated appropriated amount of the lottery fund, $17.7 million, the larger segment of our budget being that other funds that includes both the two veterans' homes, and then the majority of that is the veterans' homes on the $100 million. And then the other large share of home loan other funds dollars for a total of $120 million. The general fund, as you know, the general fund and lottery fund is that bigger part that the Ways and Means and the legislature wrestles with. And for our share, historically has been all general fund, now with those opportunities out of Measure 96 dollars, and now with the governor's support, not to backfill that general fund on current services. So we had presented last week, I believe it was last week, for the full $10 million on general fund for current services and allowing those lottery funds to be above and beyond. Whether it was just pure general fund or lottery fund, we've always had a strong mix, both for our own statewide veteran services, but that pass-through has always been a significant effort, both down to the counties and service organizations. And then the newest opportunity is out of those broader partnerships that the legislature is considering beyond the VSO land. And feel free to interrupt with any questions throughout. As you all know, and you've seen these numbers before, the incredible economic driver, $2.6 billion a year on federal VA, $1.3 billion just on that cold, hard cash. And that's been an increase from 1.1 to 1.3, so a $200 million surge since 2013, $400 million a biennium. But that doesn't come simply automatically. It takes that advocacy, which is that role of the veteran service officers at the county and state level. And the service orgs. So here's the snapshot of the historic funding for veteran services from 2007. These are all legislative adjusted budgets or adopted budgets. 2007 and 09, a little over $7 million, and on upwards, more and more of that general fund to fund those veteran services through the 15-17 biennium, now over $10 million, $10.1 million roughly for that current service level. For those dollars, we've been delivering a significant return, both out of our core role of that training, claims review, the appellate work, and then what the counties add with that direct claims representation and local outreach and partnerships. One of our key performance measures, how many power of attorneys are we taking on for Oregon veterans? A significant increase from a little over 8,000 to almost 12,000 from 13 through fiscal year 16. The number of new claims filed for veterans, about 6,000 in fiscal year 2013 and doubled to fiscal year 2016. That's both our Vietnam veterans finally engaging. The commissioner was, his brother also served in Vietnam, but didn't get service connected for his Agent Orange exposure until a year and a half ago. So a significant surge of Vietnam veterans, as well as our returning Iraq, Afghanistan veterans driving those numbers. And then simply the rising share of the average compensation, now upwards over 15,000 on a per capita average basis for those over 67,000 veterans that are service connected.
Good. Director, could you help me understand this, the power attorney? I'm not clear exactly what that is or how that is handled.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lively, power of attorney, it's a limited power of attorney to help represent that individual's disability claim and represent them back to the federal
VA.
But it's a good way, we bake it into our key performance measures because it also, claims, simply a claims number, it could be another claim for an existing veteran who's already been pulled in. Mm-hmm. So the new power of attorney helps us begin to measure that outreach function of how broadly are our county VSOs, not just serving veterans that are already at a 10% disability and getting them to 30, which is valuable and good, but shows the breadth of the outreach. So they are giving us that power of attorney for us then to submit those claims up to the federal
VA.
And a growing share of those kind of the quality metric of that disability compensation and pension system, key performance measure three for us, how much on average are we drawing down for those individual veterans? Always have had a above the national average, and that speaks to the quality of the claim representation by submitting them on your own or with the FedVA. So this is distribution of just the state funding. So counties, a large county like a Multnomah or a Lane, are usually about three quarters of the funding for a county VSO. In the smaller counties, often the state is that more significant, larger percentage. This is on an annual basis, so you can double these for the biennial impacts. But for our $4.7 million that we pass through on a biennial basis, here's how they get broken out by county. And we don't have the population numbers on there, but the formula for the distribution is 55% of the dollars that the legislature appropriates are divided equally across any county that has a veteran service office function to get that base level across the entire state. And then 45% of those funds divvied up on a population metric. So we would take that 10 grand or 10,000 individual veterans in a Yamhill County, and they would get a proportionate share of that remaining 45%. So Polk County receives about $31,000 a year from state funding, which is a significant surge, but by no measure the largest segment. They are contributing a lot of money from that local level. But both the county and state contributions pale in comparison to that impact on the what we draw down from the federal VA. So in Polk County, this is a 20, Jerry, that one lone VSO with an admin assistant is helping draw down $23.5 million on an annual basis.
Yamhill County.
Did I say?
He said Polk.
Polk County just stood up one.
It's the Marines. They never knew where it was.
They had problems with geography.
If I could emphasize, that Polk County did just stand up a VSO program, and that there is now only one county.
I'm from the state, and I'm here to help. I apologize.
You know, Mr. Commissioner, I'm glad that the Navy's there with him to get him to where he needs to go.
Yamhill, 72, that's a much better number.
Yeah,
that's
a better number, yeah.
If Polk County now has a VSO, it hasn't had traditionally. They just stood it up. Marion County remains the last county. If Marion County is paying attention, if any Marion County representatives might be around, it's the last county that doesn't have a VSO. But please continue.
And we had a great presentation this week to the Marion County Commission, a work session, where we had VSOs present on what they do and the opportunity that they have both to participate in the existing pass-through, but what we feel is a naturally coming surge out of the lottery funds. No better time to add them into the mix. And they're weighing that. They've got a challenging budget, just like all counties and all the state at large. But where we feel we will continue to feel the need to pull our statewide veteran services into that training, claims review, appeal, outreach, and partnerships at a statewide level to truly get that embedded local function with Marion County would be excellent, and especially at a time when we're not going to reduce it, the share on any other county. So here are the historical costs. So this is the original governor's budget, where that $2 million general fund rests on lottery, almost a $20 million surge of investments. Now with the governor's blessing to advocate for the full $10 million, will allow the legislature to consider upwards of $28.5 million of expanded veteran services. And again, that's a broad term, both for those VSO service orgs, our funding at statewide efforts at ODVA, and then the broader partnerships, whether with tribes, nonprofits, other community partners. I will just mention that's the full measure of what we think is available. We will want to make sure there are some reserves so that we're not over-promising and in cut mode to our partners that we're passing through funds through to, whether off of new casinos up in Washington, whether other changes in lottery patterns or other changes on the general fund. So the rough costs for a VSO, $78,000 salary and benefits at the county or state level. Once they are trained up and fully with a full caseload, helping to draw down $1.7 million on average every year. That's a lifetime benefit as long as that service-connected injury and disability doesn't change. So it keeps rolling up. So that five-year cost, less than $500,000 annually on an annual basis in those 5 years, will be then drawing down $27.5 million. So not only is this good for veterans and their families, we truly view veteran service office function and officers as ATMs to better draw down that federal VA dollar in a way that is simply very powerful. So the big question, which is somewhat a swag, and I believe this is our last slide that we'll present, and then happy to take questions and any technical ones for Mitch. What do we think a surge? So out of $4.7 million this biennium, $500,000 was one time. So we have to buy that back just to get to CSL, essentially, of what the counties are expecting for pass-through. Of the surge over that $4.7 million, what do we think that begins to buy us in terms of new veteran service officers in the field? That's what we can say how much claims and how much return, but we also want to know how many more VSOs do we think this is going to get out there? It's not simply a raw number of take the bucket of money and divide by that 78,000, because they're not all statewide employees. So when sometimes it's only a $10,000 surge. At the $1 million level, you might only get $10,000 surge for a smaller county, a $25,000 surge on a $50,000 surge for a larger county. That might not be the break point for where they are able to invest in staffing at an FTE for a VSO or for an admin assistant. It may go into further outreach. That still augments our claims work, but isn't more eyes and ears out there. We begin to see that significant surge just off of the state dollars. If you get to the cusp, they are going to be inspired to add that extra 10,000 or to get them over the top for a position. We've seen that as we've moved from 60-odd to 88 VSOs over the last 3-4 years. But just off of the state investments, we will begin to see significant surge of VSOs at that 3 million mark, getting over 10 VSOs out there, over 25 at that 4 million surge, and over 35, almost a 50% surge of VSOs at that $5 million surge level. Then those rough projections of what that begins to draw down on comp and pen is a significant return. And these are conservative estimates. It doesn't take into account both the national service orgs. This was just an analysis of the CVSOs.
Mr. Director.
Yes.
Before, and I know Representative Lively has a question. After this morning's conversation, I would be focusing more on that 4 million, the 15 to 18 FTE category seems to have, with the subcommittee chairs, a yes. If there's more sometime, great, but around that category is something that I think for planning purposes is worthy of looking at, fleshing out later.
Yes.
Thank you. So, and all of this is great information, and I'm very supportive of what we're doing. So my question, though, goes back to just having a person in the position doesn't guarantee, because one of the issues we've talked about is reaching the veterans so that they'll actually come in. In some cases, we know, for different reasons, veterans aren't just going to walk in. So isn't part of this, in order for them to be successful, attached to something else, though, that's going to help us do a better job of alerting the veterans to the services? I mean, I want to make sure if we make these investments that indeed the return, because that's what people are going to look at, the return's actually there, that not that there's not enough veterans, but that we're actually reaching those veterans to do that.
Chair Evans, Representative Lively, members of the committee, we've had $1 million surges in 13, 15, 15, 17. They are limited key performance measures, but they do show that track record of success. We haven't necessarily micromanaged that pass through to county VSOs, and I'm relatively comfortable not doing so with too many strings attached. So it's a broad discretion down to the leadership team, both with the county commissioners that's been re-engaged, our relationship with the veterans community locally, but also with those VSOs. Some of these surge, if they're not at the cusp of being in, if the best value added at that local decision level isn't a person, they have that discretion if it's a marketing and an awareness. If they don't have a travel budget to be able to get out to the hinterlands of their large county, right. If they don't have the training dollars to be able to come to our annual conference, they can use that flexibly, and we have not put many strings on those funds.
One,
I appreciate that.
To that point, one other expectation I think would be clear, and I think we made that to the director of the lottery, but we'll make it again more clear, is that as they do their advertisement for what the lottery does, the idea of, oh, by the way, Veteran Services is now one of the programs we're doing, and one could hope that at least part of their campaign could be, if you're a vet and you haven't been contacted, this is for you. I mean, we're doing this outreach for as a part of that supplemental package to get the word out.
So. They've already, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, they've already reached out. They're excited to have us as part of the lottery programs. They do broad marketing and awareness around the state parks, around that economic development.
Right.
You know, they do a Teacher of the Year effort in driving some of their marketing dollars, not just into marketing, but into helping further double down on the projects that they're supporting. So they're excited to bring that into the fold.
Commissioner?
Just a point I'd like to make. Veterans, by the very nature of having served, are a very proud group of people, and they're not going to come just because of advertising. That's why it's so critical to have that VSO, that personal outreach, to go out, seek those people out, find out who the veterans are in the county, and make that personal contact. And I know my brother, I was after him for years, and he finally got to the point where he'd used up all of his own resources and was forced to do it when he was almost 70 years old. And so now he's got limited time left, but that comes from being a person of service. So that's why funding VSOs is so critical.
Absolutely. The discussion about the lottery is supplemental.
Absolutely.
And I thank you, Mr. Chair. I was speaking with the chief and myself and Representative Meek. We had a meeting and we were talking about, yeah, it's okay to have the VSOs, but how do we get out to the people that are Joe Blow working, that has their head down, they're raising their family, and they're going to school, well, not going to school, but they're raising their family, they're earning a living. How do we get in touch with them? Because most of those people have benefits coming, they just don't know it. And so we have to educate them some way. And I'm not sure how we do it. It's just that we need to do it.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I might, a great question, and it runs the gamut from our younger veterans that are online and not necessarily engaging in the service orgs to how do you reach folks that are working and professional, how do you reach folks that are in senior centers and home care. More eyes and ears does help, but it's also those broader partnerships, and very similar on the emergency management. How do you get that broader awareness out there is a big piece. But I'll also hand over to Mitch to talk a little bit. We've emphasized that local investment of the pass-through, but as you get more VSOs, both on that training side, our role at the statewide level, and then also as those claims are surging through our Portland office, a little to make sure that we don't become the bottleneck to talk about our statewide impact.
And if we could, for the next maybe 5 minutes or so, I'd want to move to the next subject. This is great information, but for future discussions as we move forward, that 15 FTE with two or three, two in DOC, one at ODVA for the incarcerated veterans piece, or 18 CVSOs out there in the formula, I think is the sweet spot that we're looking for, just for your planning purposes. But go ahead.
Chair Evans, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mitch Sparks. I'm the Director of Veterans Services for ODVA. Actually, I'd like to start out for this current year, and I'll make this kind of short, but this just currently right now, I checked with our Portland claims office yesterday, is we've had the past 30-day period, working days, that is, that we've had some days with 130 claims submitted in one day.
Wow.
That have flowed through our office in Portland. So
congratulations, that's really good.
Yeah, we've.
The look on your face tells me that's a lot more than expected, though, because it looks like a lot extra work.
It is, and what there's been some complications and the federal VA has made claims submission from us to them a lot more complicated. So what we're looking, and that's because they've tried to update through a electronics claim process that's half done, So we're doing about half of our claims are going electronically through a program, a portal, and the other half we're having to submit manually, and then the other half we're getting by mail, and we have to hand walk up to them. So our staff there, which consists of the administrative staff in our Portland office, consists of about three people that that do the actual the small review of the claims, and then making sure everything is correct, and then submitting to the federal VA. And we have a larger quality assurance look at the quality of the claim, and a deeper look at the legal sufficiency, basically, of each, not every claim, but the majority of claims that come through. And that kind of keys into our training program, which, and that going on this week, we have what I call the Benefits Boot Camp, and it's a week-long training that is a requirement that all new CDSOs go through. So they come to our agency, and they spend a week with us where we give them the solid foundation to do claims work. So, and we're also having, and we're talking, Representative Esquivel asked some great questions in there, and is that one of the ways that we are doing is doing some really out-of-the-box thinking about outreaches on a statewide level to drive veterans in. And anytime, over the past year, I've done 47 events where I've gone out, and it's usually with our aging veteran service director, Mary Yeager, and we go out and we tag team events where we go and do presentations on veterans benefits and talk to, like, the local ADRCs or the state hospital. One of the really out-of-box ones is we formed a partnership with the Oregon Funeral Home Directors Association. And I knew you would give me that look, but what we're trying to do is to find out more about veterans, the surviving spouses. Right. So it has worked quite well, is that we've actually gotten more response to the county. Where it's going down to the county. Everything that we do publicly is to drive veterans to our county veterans service office.
Great.
If I'm in a Bend and I'm talking to a group, a civic group, and the questions are, how do we get veteran, you know, how do we help a veteran? Well, this is how you do it. See that gentleman sitting right over there? That's Keith McNamara, the county veterans service office. You need to call him and get them into the office. If you can, drive them in. Maybe Keith can come visit. So we're having a full court press throughout the state of Oregon, looking at better ways to drive people into the office. And then we still have our email outreach that we're doing, and various other outreaches, and through our gov delivery system to try to drive those veterans into commissioner's office in Yamhill County.
Okay. Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to illustrate a little bit about getting people for benefits that they don't know they are eligible for, my mother has been a widow for 30-some years, and my stepdad served in Korea and served up in the front lines in Korea for a year. Well, she went 30-some years before we realized that she had a widow's benefit. $1,100 a month, and she only received that a couple, two, 3 years, because just when you first got there, I think, Chief, is when you helped us that. So, but prior to that, the 30-some years, she was eligible for that, and she didn't know it, and we didn't know it. So that's what we need to emphasize.
Well, what I'd like to do, first of all, is commend you. For those that may not be following all of this, ODVA is a little agency in terms of people, and they're doing a lot of great work. Mm-hmm. Polk County, the commissioner there, Jennifer Wheeler, cannot tell the praises of one Mitch Sparks more than anybody else out there.
It's Chief Sparks.
Chief. She was very excited about the training that our new VSO got. Happens to be Army, not Air Force, I was hoping, but nonetheless Army. And but she did a great
job
with that.
Married to a Marine.
Married to a Marine. And I know on the incarcerated veterans, and I know on whole, basically setting the table for trying to make sense of how to optimize the lottery dollars, the trust the people have given us, in the most measurable and effective ways. And I know it's not easy. So I just want to say thank you very much for bringing forward this discussion about plussing up the CVSOs. There's no debate on the value of it, which, quite frankly, 10 years ago, that would have not been the case. But there's no debate now about the quality of it. The question is how we can stretch and support in the right way so that we do sufficient outreach at the same time we put a little money into housing, a little money into educational money, some other programs. So thank you very much for this presentation. It'll be very helpful moving forward. Yes, sir.
Chair Evans, member of the committee, thank you for the compliment, but the reality is that we have a really great team of people who really know what they're doing. And I think this is just a personal opinion, but the time and place is right now to do this. We are set to make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for making the trip, Commissioner. Appreciate
it. Yes, thank you very much for the time to speak and for all the work you're doing. And I will support, as long as you're moving in a positive direction, you got my support.
All right. Thank you. And for those that are paying attention or tuning in and want to review this tape later, the materials for the conversation are all on OLIS. I recommend that people review them. We're going to close the informational meeting on County Veteran Service Officer Funding. Again, appreciate the director, Chief Sparks, and the commissioner's input. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 80. Senate Bill 80. Mr. Volk.
Thank you, Chairman Evans. Senate Bill 80 recognizes the service of Native American veterans, requires the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to assist with programs overseen by tribes and U.S. government accreditation of tribal veteran representatives. Even in the face of sometimes difficult and complicated government-to-government relationships with the United States, Native Americans have served in the armed forces throughout history and continue to serve at higher rates than any other ethnic group. In addition, the highest concentration of active female service members are Native American. Within Oregon borders, there are more than 100,000 members of 9 federally recognized tribes, and approximately 3,800 tribal members are veterans. It consists of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs Indian Reservation, the Confederated Tribes of Umatilla Indian Reservation, the Burns Paiute Tribe, the Confederated Tribes of Siletz Indians of Oregon, the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, the Cow Creek Band of Umpqua Indians, the Confederated Coos, Lower Umpqua and Sisseola Tribes, and the Klamath Tribe and Coquille Tribe. Senate Bill 80 recognizes the unique service of Native American veterans and directs the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to assist with the accreditation of tribal veterans representatives by the federal government and any veteran programs overseen by tribes. There is a fiscal, it has been deemed indeterminate, and the revenue is no revenue impact. The Senate voted 30 ayes, and that was all.
That's a real controversial vote there, 30-0. All right. Mr. Ren Leno, Mr. Steve Bob, if you'd like to come forward, along with Mr. Director Cameron Smith. Thank you for bringing forward this bill. And I understand there is an amendment also in the works. Do we have that amendment?
I have not seen it. Actually, I have it.
Okay. Well, all right. Go ahead and speak. Whichever order you'd like to go, Mr. Chairman, it's up to you.
Okay. Well,
welcome.
Committee Chairman Evans, committee. My name is Ren Leno. I am the chairman of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde. We've submitted testimony. I would like to talk a little about the amendment. Apparently, there needs to be. The amendment was, I talked to some people about this, and we actually go into a little issue on education. We created a curriculum. I don't know how many people know that. Grand Ronde stepped out. We created a curriculum for education in schools about the 9 tribes in Oregon to be taught. In that process, we bring teachers out to the tribe and we teach them how to teach that curriculum. I believe, and as a veteran, I believe if you're going to have success with these people going out to these tribes, they need to understand the culture of the tribes. Because if you don't understand that, it's not going to be successful. Because in the tribal culture, and it goes to the question, and I was wanting to comment on that question, how do you get veterans to come in and ask for that service? That is a very difficult question. And by the way, we hold a veterans powwow the weekend after the 4th. I invite any of you there. Our actual theme this year is your veteran took care of you. Now it's time to take care of your veteran. Because in the tribal environment, it's about families coming. I actually went and looked for services. I would have never done it had my wife, my kids, my grandkids pushed me to do that. Because in the belief of veterans, there's always somebody that needs it more than you. So we believe one of the answers to your question is you need to get these families involved, whether it's kids, grandkids, or whatever, to come forward and tell the story of their veterans and get them involved. Because if not, that veteran will sit home and go without that service, believing there's another veteran needing that service. So that's one thing we recognized it way back. Actually, I'm very proud to be Grand Ron. We recognized it way back. My dad was a World War II veteran, served 4 years. I had 5 uncles that served in World War II from the South Pacific to North Africa. We recognized we didn't ask to be put on these reservations for Native Americans. We got put there. And when you get put there and you're born there, you're raised there, you don't leave there. My dad, the only time he ever left the reservation was when he went and fought in the war. And basically, we recognized that, so we went out and sought an MOU with the Veterans Department so we could serve our elder veterans at our clinic so they don't have to go to veterans other places. So that was really critical, and that's the type of things that we do at our tribe. Very fortunate to be able to do that. But I think really the answer, and I think it, and sometimes I think the thought of all the money and all the words and everything that got spoke, but people tend to forget when people sign them papers to go into service, you put your life on the line. I've seen people pay that ultimate price. Now, they didn't ask, what are you going to do for me later? They thought it was an honor, a responsibility to do it. Now, I think it's our responsibility, and I believe Oregon people, when they voted for the lottery money, spoke loud and clear. They want to take care of their veterans. We just got to figure out how to get them in. So I'd just like to thank you. I'd invite you out. It's great to see all of our veterans in the powwow circle, and they're just there just to get acknowledged for what they did.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I've attended one, and it's a very special experience.
Yes.
Sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee. Thank you for having me. My name is Steve Bob Sr. I'm a member of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Round. I'm one of a few full-blooded Grand Round Indians. I'm a Marine Corps Vietnam veteran, and I'm currently the chair of our tribe's Veteran Special Event Board. So thank you for letting me speak on behalf of the Senate Bill 80 and to be able to speak on behalf of Native Americans and their unwavering commitment and steadfast belief and their continued obligation to defend this land that we still see as ours. Native Americans did not believe that you could own Mother Earth. They did not believe that you could own the land. Instead, we chose to live in conjunction with Mother Earth, to take only what we needed and to live with the least amount of disturbance as we could. Native Americans did not sail here from faraway lands. Our families did not come in wagon trains from the east. We are blessed to be able to walk in the footsteps of our ancestors each and every day, the indigenous peoples of this land for over 10,000 years. So with all the injustices that my people has had to endure, we still continue to have an unbreakable bond with this land that our Creator has blessed us with. We have a obligation. We have an internal feeling of protecting this country without fear. Native Americans refer to each other as family. So now we share. We share this beautiful land with our new family. And our new brothers and sisters know that they can always count on the first peoples of this nation and their warriors to come and stand before those who would threaten them. Because we are all of one family, a family of God. Warriors do not live with the feeling of being owed, but for their contributions to the peace and the freedom of this nation that we all love so very much. Surely the care of all those who have served should be on an equal level. thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you, sir.
Well, yeah, on the amendment, and it was really kind of what I had spoke to. Basically, the training we could make available at Grand Ronde, just like I talked about for our, we do for our curriculum, our teachers, and I'm sure, I don't speak for the other tribes, but I think that would be a critical piece to this, to make it successful.
Sir, I know that an amendment was written. I can see it there, and I know
we don't have it.
Justin was working on it. Not real sure what happened between LC and my committee administrator, but what we can say is, or at least what I think I can say on behalf of the committee is, keep talking. We like the way the amendment's going, a way to move this bill that had a 30-0 vote in the Senate, has agreement among the agencies and the tribes, is something we want to assist and move forward. So it's a paperwork issue. We will try to find a way to figure out what happened there. But keep explaining to me why that amendment that we're going to consider soon is a good amendment, please.
I think I truly believe if without the amendment in our native ways, and you can see it, it's even recognized in our courts. I mean, a lot of law out there for our grandparents and stuff raising kids. We have them in tribal courts. We have there's consideration of aunts and uncles who really are not aunts and uncles, and them things are all our culture. And if the person out there doesn't, if he just is going to sit in his office and wait for a veteran to walk in the door and say, I need help, it's not going to happen.
Right.
He needs to be open to tribal his family. And that family can actually be people who aren't even related to him, actually come in and say, I got this veteran, he needs help.
Right.
And that's, I think that's the purpose of this amendment, to make sure that we get these people, I hate to use the word train, but just aware of our culture and our history.
Cultural competency is actually something that there's a great interest in statewide right now. So I think that this particular amendment, I look forward to reading it and discussing it.
Yes.
Thanks. So I appreciate you being here today. When we drafted Measure 96, there was a specific call out in multiple versions of it as it tried to progress over a four-year period that recognized tribal VSO and called that out specifically because it is a little bit of a different population in need. You've all served and all wore the uniform, but there is an inherent difference, I think. And so we try to recognize that and honor that in the language of the bill. So coming from a large Middle Eastern family where everybody's your uncle, whether they are or not, I appreciate why you're here and why you're having this conversation with us. So I look forward to seeing amendments as well.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Director.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Cameron Smith, the director of ODVA, and I appreciate both of my four members here, both served in Vietnam, the depth of their passion and advocacy, which is not solely for tribal veterans, but for all of our veterans. The power of the memorial that Steve designed on the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde land, not just honoring the names of tribal veterans, but all veterans across Mid-Willamette and Oregon. The powwow, not solely that Chair Lena Lino helped kick off, not solely for tribal veterans, but that broader community partnership. And the thing that I would emphasize, we would welcome any, the direction of that amendment is around consultation and training and a two-way street. Next week, we'll actually be out to Grand Ronde with a tribal vet rep summit, both with FedVA, ODVA, tribal governments, other partners. And it's that two-way street. What can we learn from our tribal partners on culture, history, community, but also how can we educate on the federal VA opportunities or other state services? And the one other thing that I would emphasize for our 9 federally recognized tribes, each has their own unique history and culture, and to truly engage not just one size fits all, but truly engaging them on their own terms. So we look forward to that.
Any other comments or questions about? Yes, sir. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the date again for the powwow?
Yeah,
weekend right after the 4th, so I believe it would be like 7th and 8th. Or whatever. We actually do a day before the powwow, which we actually draw veterans in and go through the benefits, try and get them there to talk about benefits. Our clinic participates in both dental and health to give physicals and all that stuff. But,
and when I showed up to the powwow one year, rushing from the Capitol in a suit and tie, they took pity on me as a fellow veteran and made sure I course corrected the beadwork.
So, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Director and Mr. Bob, what I would like to just get a quick yes-no on, and I assume it's going to be yes, provided that the amendment that I know Justin worked on is in fact the amendment we get submitted for consideration. Understanding your schedules, I assume you're in favor of the bill with the amendment?
Yes.
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 Okay. So what will happen is, as soon as we get the amendment, we will probably work the bill. We won't necessarily, you won't need to come in and testify to it. We'll certainly let you know when it's out of committee and moving to the floor, presuming that it does so. But we're going to use this public hearing as not just on Senate Bill 80, but also on your commentary on the amendment that we anticipate.
All right. Okay.
All right.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir?
I think you should welcome home the Vietnam veterans because they were up in I Corps, I assume.
Yeah. So,
thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. I was going to say another way to get veterans in the door, reduce the paperwork.
Yeah.
I'm serious. I'd almost rather go on an ambush or cross the rice paddy in 120 degrees than
be on point.
Paperwork.
Be on point for a year.
Your frustration.
Yeah. Point or carry the radio.
Your frustration is shared. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay,
appreciate
you.
It. We're going to close public hearing on Senate Bill 80, and we're going to be looking for that amendment and hopefully getting that to us by next Thursday so we can perhaps work it. Okay. Going to open Senate Bill 116 Alpha. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chairman Evans. Senate Bill 116A, as amended, requires the Oregon Department of Forestry to honor existing State Parks and Recreational Department access pass issued to disabled veterans and to persons on leave from active duty military status on specific holidays and to the extent possible to prevent access to recreation areas on forest lands free of charge. Oregon offers a wide range of outdoor recreational opportunities which attracts veterans and other residents. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife currently offers a permanent combined hunting and fishing license for qualifying disabled veterans, and the State Parks and Recreation Department provides free day pass use in camping, RV sites, and tent sites year-round for disabled veterans and for persons on leave from military active duty status on the days of Memorial Day, Independence Day, and Veterans Day. Senate Bill 116A provides similar free access for disabled veterans and to persons on leave from military active duty status to recreation areas on state forest lands by directing the Oregon Department of Forestry to honor the access pass already issued by the State Parks and Recreational Department. The fiscal is minimal fiscal impact, the revenue, no revenue impact. The vote in the Senate was 330 ayes.
Do we have anyone from the State Forestry Department here at all? Anyone to testify on this at all?
Nobody's
signed
up.
Okay.
Okay.
Good job, Mr. Vice Chair.
It's pretty hard to have a public hearing when you don't have anyone to want to testify. But
it's a good idea.
This is Senator Olson, Senator Riley's bill. I think. Pardon?
I said it's a good bill.
Yeah, it's a very good bill. So I don't know if we need any input at all, but I know I don't. But anyone? Anyone have any questions or anything on it? Oh, it's pretty simple. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, the only question I've got is, it talks about showing proof. And in a lot of these state parks, there is no there's no one at the entrance.
There.
And so I'm wondering what they're supposed to do when they come into the park. If there's no one there, what kind of documentation they leave on their dash, or it doesn't address
that. Whose bill is this?
This is Senator Olson, Senator Riley.
That's a good point, because I got a ticket once in a park. There was nobody to take, you know.
I did too.
You did too, nobody's, yeah.
Nobody even from the forestry department.
You want to close the public hearing and just roll it to next Thursday?
Why don't we hold it over?
Except there's a bulletin board and
let me to answer how that works for the Oregon Parks.
Please.
Do so from the dais, if you would, please give your name.
Yes.
All right, and where you who you represent?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Claudia Chabano, and I'm representing the Oregon State Parks and Recreation Department. I'm responsible for managing the program that allows veterans to camp for free, so I'm happy to answer any questions about how the program is currently used and what documentation veterans provide. And then we don't have answers yet on how we would work with the Department of Forestry, but I think our pass would definitely transfer easily to their campgrounds. So I think, Representative Lewis, your question was, if there's nobody at the park, what does that look like? So veterans get a card that is valid for 4 years and then display that in a on their dash for access to day-use parks. For registration parks, they make an advanced registration. They provide that number that is a unique number associated with their pass to make that registration, so the fee is waived at the time. If they go into a park and they self-register, then on the self-registration envelope, they fill out the information, and again, they provide that same number that is associated with their pass.
Okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Keep it simple.
Yeah. Okay.
Pretty well see.
Everybody's good?
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you. But I didn't know that you could actually do that, so I'm kind of excited about figuring out how to do that now. But thank you.
Yes.
All right. Any other questions or comments about this before we close the public hearing? I'm going to close the public hearing on 116A. Nope. We're going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 129A.
Thank you, Chairman Evans. Senate Bill 129A requires the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs Advisory Committee to advise the Legislative Assembly whether a task force should be forced to study issues related to diagnosis and treatment of post-traumatic stress injuries by February 1st, 2018. Sunsets December 31st, 2018. Takes effect the 91st day after sign D. There are more than 325,000 veterans in Oregon. Anywhere from 10 to 30% of veterans are estimated to have post-traumatic stress injuries, and more may express only partial symptoms. The percentage of veterans who experience post-traumatic stress injuries varies depending on where the veteran served and specifically based on the veteran's individual experience. The number of veterans with PTSD varies by service era. Between 11 to 20% of those who served in Operations Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom experience PTSD symptoms in a given year. About 12% of those who served in the Gulf War, Desert Storm in any given year. And finally, about 30% of Vietnam veterans have experienced PTSD at some point in their lifetime. Senate Bill 129A requires the Advisory Committee for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to advise the Legislative Assembly on the merits of creating a task force to study improvements in the diagnosis and treatment of PTSD injuries for veterans in particular by February 1st, 2018. The fiscal is minimal fiscal impact, revenue, no revenue impact. The Senate vote was 29 ayes and one excused.
Mr. Director?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Cameron Smith with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I think a relatively simple bill, but also is a little bit of a strange one and kind of raised questions on the Senate side. Normally, I mean, I think if you asked our advisory committee today, they would say either yay or nay and probably would err on the yay side. Let's do a task force. We, of course, would be certainly happy to help staff that. We've had great traction out of our previous efforts, whether on incarcerated veterans or a traumatic brain injury task force. But and we Our advisory committee is a hugely value-added part of our agency. 9 members, all veterans, all eras, great diversity, both geographically and otherwise across the state. But a question, I question whether we need statutes and legislation to simply ask us to do something that we're certainly happy to do. Whether it's other questions, they have broad statutory authority in our foundational statutes going back to 1945 to advise on anything at the request of either legislators or the governor or the director and the team at ODVA, and they've got broad discretion to do so. So in the future, I think we don't actually need statutes to do so.
For purposes of
I agree.
Context, for purposes of context, I very much wish I agreed with Director Smith, and I do agree in terms of the way things should be. This particular bill is offered because Legislative Council, and I have it written down, that Legislative Council believes that a task force for veterans services, for veterans researching PTSD or PTSI, that a task force would not be a legitimate use of the funds as it was sent to the ballot. Now, I say that with full understanding of the confusion one might have about that, given I was with Representative Parrish, the two people that asked LC to draft the ballot measure. But what this bill does, though it's clunky, is it says that the advisory committee can consider doing a task force because the advisory committee isn't necessarily staffed or supported by lottery funds. So that task force idea could be funded through their operations, and that if there's programs that come out of it, those could, of course, be funded by lottery. This is a bill that Senator Boquist put forward to ensure that the language was clear, that a study could be done. I agree with the director. I think it's goofy as hell that we actually have to do it this way. But the idea of a task force, there is question from Legislative Council whether lottery funds can actually support it. This ties in general and lottery funds, so there shouldn't be a question. If the committee decides not to move it, I understand that. The goal was to try to move it down to Ways and Means so that one way or another, the advisory committee and the new role we're hoping that they will be able to have can look at the possibilities of access for treatment for PTSD.
So,
yes, sir.
Mr. Taylor, so my confusion is there's still general funds in the budget. And so here's where I'm confused. I don't know what the lottery at this point has to have with it. I can appreciate that some of the lottery funds may be spent on programs later, but I'm confused as, since they already have general funds and we've done task force and things before within their budget, I'm confused why we get into this discussion, frankly.
I wish I had an answer for you. The concept of task force was seen as a use that was not outreach or services.
But I mean, was the concept of the task force to be, I mean, I'm trying to go back to the lottery. So what, the fact that we would talk about a task force didn't necessarily attach it to the lottery dollars.
Well, at one point, a way to fund some of the task forces that people wanted to do for veteran services could be out of the lottery. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So remind me of the advisory committee, the history of that.
Well, right now the history is the advisory committee has statutory ability, as outlined, as the directors talked about. The package that we are moving forward or hoping that we'll move forward through Ways and Means would give the advisory committee an additional new duty to review and recommend grants for pilot-type programs. And this could be done under the language we've sent down there already. The question is, because this was a particular issue to one particular member of the committee, they wanted to ensure that there would be no legal reason that they couldn't study this issue.
So another, just to clarify for me, maybe it's the hour. It looks like it says directs the advisory committee to do the work and report to the legislative committee regarding establishing a task force. So it doesn't really make them do a task force. It makes them do the study, the way I read it. Am I right?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Rep. Boone, I would agree from my non-legal reading of the proposed legislation, it would ask our advisory committee, should they recommend yes or no back to this body whether we should have a task force, not whether they would operate one. It would simply be their 9-member deliberative process, which we would do in a heartbeat with no fiscal.
Right.
And they would probably say, yes, let's do a task force. Now, then the question, if that was a piece of legislation or simply a budget note, depending on the breadth of that task force or other things that come out, often it can have a minimal fiscal and one that we would absorb, given that it's in the interest of our better serving a broad swath of veterans. The real question, I think, comes down, I don't know that this solves the conundrum of whether you can use Measure 96 lottery funds for a task force. Again, from my uninformed, non-legal reading, I think as long as it is focused on U.S. Armed Forces and Oregon residents, there is broad discretion, I think, for the legislature to determine where to best use those funds.
I wished legislative council put that in writing, and I agree with you. On this particular issue, I think this bill has more to do with ensuring for a member or two that PTDS, post-traumatic stress disorder, post-traumatic stress injury, is not forgotten in the conversation, so that it is a requirement to be considered by somebody somewhere.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, some of it is tied to that separate bill that would set aside a pot of funds for the department and the advisory committee to weigh in on. For ones that, whether some of the community nonprofits or individual grants, if we don't set up a specific program like the county VSO or the pass-through to student veteran coordinators, that there would still be a pot of funds, and that is a bill that Ways and Means to consider whether they could help be grant-making, deciding authority for pilots like around post-traumatic stress or other support structures.
Yes.
And could have some pot of funds available for future efforts come February or beyond.
Any more questions on this very muddy issue that we...
I would, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it did come up for three bills on the Senate side. That student veteran one that is before us essentially was amended very... It had a much more broader a program establishment as introduced, was amended simply for the advisory committee to review whether we should do student veteran grant program.
We're working on an amendment to that bill.
Correct.
To send it back.
Correct. And then the other one, post-traumatic stress, student veterans, and there was one other one that was similarly a kick to the advisory committee to simply review advice back to the legislature.
Okay. Any other questions on this? Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 129A. We're going to not work that today, but don't go very far, Mr. Director. After the hearing, we need to talk. What I'd like to do is I'd like to open a work session on Senate Bill 79. This is a bill that we had last week.
Last week.
Mr. Volk, please explain to us the intent that Ms. Lori Skillman did such a fine job explaining last week.
Thank you, Chairman Evans. Just to review, we heard this on April 27th. Senate Bill 79 makes explicit that the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs may file an affidavit describing its exempt status in foreclosure processes in lieu of documentation showing compliance with foreclosure mediation. And without reading the whole thing again, currently, the ODVA is required by statute to make every reasonable attempt to keep a veteran in the home purchased. This is a higher standard than that required by mediation, and ODVA has a lower foreclosure rate than the overall housing market. For these reasons, the Legislative Assembly passed Senate Bill 252 in 2015 to exempt ODVA from the foreclosure mediation requirement applicable to traditional lenders. Senate Bill 79 permits ODVA to file an affidavit describing its exempt status in foreclosure processes in lieu of documents showing compliance with mediation. As said last time, there's no fiscal impact, no revenue impact. The Senate vote was 29 ayes, one excused.
Do we have a
script? Yeah,
okay.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 79 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves Senate Bill 79 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Okay, seeing no discussion, Sky, please call the vote.
Representative Lewis.
Aye.
Representative Lively.
Aye.
Representative Meek.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Post.
Excused.
Vice Chair Boone.
Aye.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Aye.
Chair Evans.
Aye. Motion passes, and we will assign Representative Post to carry that on the floor.
That's great.
Unless you want to.
That's what you get. You get when you're not here.
Okay. And I'd like to open up a work session on Senate Bill 992.
Thank you, Chairman Evans. We last heard this also on April 27th. Senate Bill 992 designates the third Friday of every September Oregon POW/MIA Recognition Day. In 2015, the Oregon Legislative Assembly enacted House Bill 2892 to require display of the National League of Families POW/MIA flag that symbolizes the nation's concern and commitment to resolving, as far as possible, the fates of Americans still held prisoners or those who remain unaccounted for in Southeast Asia. Senate Bill 992 takes another step, designating the third Friday of each September Oregon POW/MIA Recognition Day. There is no fiscal impact, no revenue impact. The vote in the Senate was 30 ayes.
Okay. Vice Chair, who would you like to?
Sorry?
Would you like to read this one?
Of course. Chairman Evans, I move Senate Bill 992. Are we on that one yet?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. To the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Boone, my eyesight's not that good. Representative Boone moves Senate Bill 992 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, Sky, please call the vote.
Representative Lewis.
Aye.
Representative Lively.
Aye.
Representative Meek.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Post.
Excused.
Vice Chair Boone.
Aye.
Vice Chair Esquivel.
Aye.
Chair Evans.
Aye. Motion passes, and we're going to ask Representative Wisnett to carry that, but we're going to have Representative Esquivel ready to go in case Representative Wisnett's not there. Any other business? And when I ask any other business, Representative Meek, do you have something to tell me?
Yes, Chair Evans. Representative Esquivel, myself, and gentleman from the VA. Yep.
Chief Sparks.
I was going to say Mitch, but I thought that would be rude. But Chief Sparks, we met, I came up with a kind of a white paper to kind of let the committee know what we were looking at. And we wanted to see if we can allocate about $1.1 million in the funds to help the college service centers to have an opportunity to apply for a grant, and then the grant they could apply up to $100,000, but the $100,000 would have to be supplemental to the current program that they are running, and it has to go directly to the veteran service, the college service center, community center there. And so we wanted to share that with you, and there may be some questions, but there's some certain guidelines which they have to qualify, and we think it would be a good opportunity to do some more funding.
Okay, so Senate Bill 143, Representative Meek and Representative Esquivel, Representative Post, I think Post was involved.
Mm-hmm.
The chief shared ideas. There's a I believe Representative Meek's staff is actually sending that around to the original members of the work group. Okay, after
for
that?
For corrections.
Oh, yeah.
After
for
that?
For corrections or changes, yeah. Amendments. Yeah.
Changes, suggestions. After that, if you can send it to the rest of the committee, and then we get an amendment drafted for that.
Sure.
In discussions this morning with the subcommittee chairs, they agreed, as you recall, Senate Bill 143 right now is a similar to the last bill,
that we had a study, and a study's good, studies are needed, but there's an appetite to actually get some monies out to the college campuses and the universities. And there's an appetite and a shared belief among the subcommittee vice chairs that those groups, those schools that already have some investment, well, let me rephrase it. Schools that have done nothing shouldn't be rewarded for doing nothing. That those that are already doing something and have skin in the game should be given an opportunity to get some additional assistance. And because of a date certain, schools that maybe have wanted to do something now would have an incentive to do something.
Yeah.
So looking forward to those amendments.
And to carry that a little further, we were talking about maybe doing a $50,000 on up to $100,000.
Right, right.
You know. So if you have a program, you outline your program, you come in and you say, okay, this is what we want to do for our program, and but it's $75,000, well, then we would have the discretion to up that ante. But it would be on our approval of their program, of what they plan to do. And I think we talked about a two-year sunset on it, on the program, to see how well it was
right.
working.
Right, right.
Okay, so the goal is to actually send back a bill that has the study component. More studies, always good to see, benchmarks, et cetera, but also a spigot to get some funds out there to help some kids.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So thank you very much for the work on that. All right.
Good job.
We're going to, I don't think so, because we're not going to do that, right?
We're going to do the Titan Fusion.
Okay. Mr. Volk, go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairman Evans. Next Tuesday, we plan on having a joint House Vet, Senate Vet hearing on the Titan Fusion program. We'll probably start a little bit later, about 3:30, due to the Senate doing some HCRs prior to that. And we're likely, due to the seating configuration, we may end up in hearing room A as opposed to this one. So we'll try to keep you posted, but look to starting a bit later, about 3:30, and in a different room.
We're not going to have any other business that day because of anticipated floor session, given what's been going on recently. So we just want to keep it short and simple.
Great. All right. Sounds good.
Thank you, everybody, for being here. Have a wonderful weekend.
You're adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Director.
You're adjourned.
Thank you.
Mr. Director.
Wonderful weekend.